It's a long song, and it seems a lot longer when you're standing up here than when you're preparing it. And it's somewhat repetitive as well. But who knows who that was written by? Pretty simple question. I saw Kelly's hand first. The Birds. And what's that? It was Ecclesiastes first. Of course, the turn wasn't in there, but anyway, one more question, and this one actually has a prize attached to it. What year did that one top the charts? The one that's closest gets the prize. 65. Kevin, your wife nailed it on the head. It was 1965. So, this isn't a lot, but it's $5 Taco Bucks. It's for Taco Bell.
Oh, cool. Yeah,
I don't know if you like that or not, but I don't know. It's a good prize, to say the least, but that actually spends as a check, so you actually get change for that. As it was pointed out, the original words for that song were not by the Birds. And I probably will date myself in saying I didn't even know it was the Birds. I had to do some research. But I knew the song nonetheless. As you guessed, we're going through Ecclesiastes. The original author, according to scholarship, was either King Solomon or somebody who was really close to King Solomon. Whose reign was actually from 970 BC to 928 BC, if anyone wanted to know. He inherited a kingdom of Israel and probably what was considered the heyday of Israel. There's a great amount of wealth. He built the first temple, which is certainly not something to be overlooked. Built palaces and who knows whatever else he actually did. But he is also known for his great wisdom. And he is also known as one who contributed to the eventual fall of Israel as well. So there's a lot of great things to him, and there's something that's not so great as well. But in doing some research, I actually found a website, and I don't know if these numbers are precise or not, but the price for gold that they compared it to was from 1999. So I redid the math, because the price per troy ounce of gold is actually like $955 or something like that right now. I don't do stocks, so I could be wrong on that. But I actually literally had to go and have the computer tell me how to say this number because it was so large. And the accumulation of 40 years of his salary, according to biblical record and everything that it was actually a Jewish site that I found it at. According to my math, which could be off, it was 454,430,208,880.60. Maybe we should have gone to Solomon for the bailouts. I don't know. But if you can grasp that for a second, how much that would be. I mean, that's, of course, by our equivalent, by our dollars, and by our cents, but it's known throughout the biblical record and throughout history, and it's even mentioned by Jesus a few times, just how wealthy and how well off everyone thought he was, how gifted and how blessed he was to be the king of Israel at that point in time. Yet in the midst of all of his wealth, wisdom, fame, and influence, it's because of his many wives that after his reign in the kingdom would split and eventually fall to many different nations that were passing through, including the Roman Empire. But in the midst of all the wisdom that he accumulated, in the midst of all the things that he did, we still have a record. We still have some of his wisdom that's kept. And I know wisdom is pretty dry to go through. It's a lot to consider, and it's actually even harder to put together a message on. But I think at this period of time, I think looking at his hindsight, we could all benefit from it quite a bit. In 1 Kings chapter 3, Solomon was given great wisdom for his request after the Lord had basically said, "What do you want? I'll give you anything." And he said, basically, give me wisdom that I can rule my kingdom. Because he had that on his heart. It's really hard to picture somebody that requested wisdom to run his kingdom well could ever run into a fall, or could ever reach that place. One could hardly imagine him falling or being dissatisfied with all he had been blessed with. But after Solomon had done many things, we'll focus on the pearls of his wisdom, his latter life. In Ecclesiastes chapter 1, we read his introductions and his latter thoughts. By the way, this is the Amplified Bible, which gives a lot more nuances than you might be used to. But basically what they've tried to do is, aside from just word-for-word translation, they've tried to give you a little bit more. So I'm just going to buzz right through chapter 1. And I want you to just kind of listen to some of the things that he says in this. And picture, here's King Solomon in the latter end of his life. After all the things that he had accomplished, here's what he has to say. He says, "The words of the preacher, the son of David, the king in Jerusalem, vapor of vapors and futility of futilities, says the preacher. All is vanity, which is emptiness, falsity, and vainglory. What profit does man have left for all his toil at which he toils under the sun?" And in brackets, it's like he's saying, "Is life worth living?" "The wind goes to the south and circles about to the north, and it circles about continually. And on its circuit, the wind returns again. All the rivers run into the sea, yet the sea is not full. To the place from which the rivers come, to there and from there they return again. All things are weary and toil, and all words are feeble. Man cannot utter it. The eye is not satisfied with seeing, nor the ear filled with hearing. The thing that has been, it is what will be again. And that which was or has been done is that which will be done again. And there is nothing new under the sun." I'm going to skip down because it's pretty lengthy. But what is crooked cannot be made straight. What is defective and lacking cannot be counted. I entered into counsel with my own mind, saying, "Behold, I've acquired great human wisdom, yes, more than all who have been over Jerusalem before me. My mind has had great experiences of moral wisdom and scientific knowledge." And those are emphasis, by the way. "And I gave my mind to know practical wisdom and to discern the character of madness and folly in which men seem to find satisfaction. I perceived that this also is a searching after the wind and a feeding on it. For in much human wisdom is much vexation, and he who increases knowledge increases sorrow." Not exactly the words you'd expect to hear from him. At least many would perceive that he'd be kind of on top of his chair, sitting back and thinking, "Man, I've accomplished so many great things. But instead, I noticed two statements that stuck out. One is verse 3. It says, "What profit does man have left from all his toil, which he toils under the sun? Is life worth living? And for in much human wisdom is much vexation, and he who increases in knowledge increases in sorrow." Almost as say, is life worth living? And human ignorance is bliss. Doesn't seem like something that he would say. I mean, I wouldn't picture it. Has anybody here read through Proverbs and seen all the wisdom that he has put in there? It just doesn't seem like he would say something like that. Combine those two with knowledge that Solomon was immensely wise and still craving a fulfilling life, there seems to be some unrest he is dealing with. How many here, and now, and you don't need to raise your hand, are pushing aside a sense of unrest? I want you to think of, in your own lives, what it is you desire, what you dream for. What is it you have lost? What is it you want to find? Not a lot of us sit here and think about that a whole lot. But this is the end of Solomon's life. And he's pursued pretty much every dream you can imagine. Just think about that for a second. With our economy the way it is currently, how many of you, without raising your hands, please don't, desire security or feel insecure due to the times we are facing? I bump into a lot of people, I mean, even at work. I listen to the radio on the way to work. I come home and I talk to my friends. There's a lot of unrest out there. There's a lot of people that are wondering how things are going to go. The purpose of those questions wasn't for me to answer them, but for us to address the issues we have and the distractions that gnaw at us throughout the week. Believe me, when I see people better off, the thought and the words I hold back are not healthy. I am human. I see people every day. And I wash cars for people that are able to afford them, and, or at least seemingly. But I hold those words back. You know, I think about them and I hold them back. And we know envy is not healthy. And there's some tension in the room when I say that. But I'm just trying to address some of these things that are under the surface. It's something that we should never let grow in our lives, but in times like these, the thoughts and the words we suppress are more common, it seems. At least they are in my life. I'm just being honest. I said, I think Solomon offers us a rare glimpse at the other side of this envy, or should I say, it warns us of what becomes of pursuits that don't include God or God's will. If we pursue these things that can fill our lives or totally distract us, it just seems like it takes for us to get there. And, you know, you've heard the old expression, hindsight is 20/20. I've probably said it before up here, and I'll continue to say it again. What we have here is Solomon's hindsight, and it's crystal clear. He knows exactly what's going to happen. And that's kind of the purpose of going through Ecclesiastes. I think it offers us a rare glimpse at the other side, to where we think that we've lost a great many things, or we have yet to gain many things. If pursued for the wrong reasons, or if pursued without God in mind, these things can completely distract us. They completely set us aside. You know, the term Satan, from which we get Satan, is actually the accuser or the deceiver. And we may not think that it's pulling us aside, but it really can. I want you all to do something. I want you to imagine the most successful person. Imagine you sitting down for a chat one-on-one. And I won't fill in the blanks here. I want you to think of the most successful person you can think of by your job or by any standards. It doesn't matter. I want you to think about that for a second. Imagine if he or she, being as well off, would say, "It's not all it's cracked up to be." Would you be shocked if that individual continued and asked you if you thought life was worth living while looking back on all their accomplishments? What if they said, it's not all it's cracked up to be? Truth be told, I almost mentioned Bill Gates, but I decided it doesn't really matter the individual. I bet their great accomplishments are not as fulfilling as you might think. Solomon lists out as many accomplishments in Ecclesiastes 2, and you'll see that the message is actually centered on Ecclesiastes 2. So I'm going to go ahead and read that. It says, I said in my mind, come now, I'll prove you with mirth and will test you with pleasure. So have a good time, enjoy pleasure. But this also was vanity, emptiness, falsity, and futility. I said of laughter, is mad and of pleasure, what does it accomplish? I searched in my mind how to cheer my body with wine, yet at the same time having my mind hold its course and guide me with human wisdom, and how to lay hold of folly, till I might see what is good for the sons of men to do under heaven all the days of their lives. And this is kind of his list of accomplishments. Listen to this. I made great works. I built myself houses. I planted vineyards. I made for myself gardens and orchards. And I planted in them all kinds of fruit trees. I made for myself pools of water for which to water the forest and to make all the trees bud. I bought men servants and maidservants and had servants born in my house. Also, I had great possessions of herds and flocks, more than any who had had me before in Jerusalem. I also gathered for myself silver and gold and treasure of kings and of the provinces I got for myself. Over $400 billion. I got for myself men singers, women singers, and the delights of sons of men, concubines, very many. 1,000 wives. I'll only say that once. So I became and I increased more than all who were before me in Jerusalem. Also, my wisdom remained with me and stood by me. And whatever my eyes desired, I kept not from them. I withheld not from my heart or any pleasure, for my heart rejoiced in all my labor. And this was my portion, a reward for all my toil. I looked on all that my hands had done and the labor I had spent doing it. And behold, all was vanity and a striving after the wind and a feeding on it. There was no profit under the sun. So I turned to consider human wisdom, the madness and folly. For what can man do who succeeds the king? Nothing but what has been done already. Then I saw even human wisdom that brings sorrow is better than the pleasures of folly. For as far as the light is better than darkness. Thank you, Pastor Frank, for mentioning that. Then I said in my heart, as it happens to the fool, so it will happen even to me. And of what use is it for me to be more wise? And I said in my heart, this also is vanity. For of the wise man, the same as of the fool, there is no permanent remembrance. Since the days to come, all will be long forgotten. A lot of people say this is a very depressing book. And I'm seeing it all written all over everyone's faces. It's kind of tough to read through. Believe me, I've been struggling, banging my head against the wall for a while with it. It's been a good struggle, though. I think it's a really good verse for us to focus on. And this is probably the toughest one for me to read. It says, so I hated life, because what is done under the sun, it was grievous to me, and all is vanity, and a striving after the wind and feeding on it. I'm going to skip. So I turned around and gave my heart up to despair over all the labor of my efforts under the sun. I skipped a few. What has a man left from all his labor and striving and vexation of heart in which he has toiled under the sun? And then he says something that he says over and over in the book. There's nothing better for a man that he should eat, drink, make himself enjoy the good in his labor. Even this I have seen is from the hand of God. For who can eat, who can have enjoyment more than I can apart from him? I want that one to sink in for a second. Think about that. He says, who can benefit any more than I have apart from God? No one can. after he had said in chapter 1, where he said everything is very circular, everything is vanity, everything returns, there is nothing new under the sun. He says that. It's the same toil, the same thing that we're facing today. It says, for who can eat, who can have enjoyment any more than I can apart from him? So, I found three main groups that Solomon grasped for while grasping to his human wisdom. So I'm going to list these out. These are kind of the points if you're looking for them. he tried wine. He tried that. I'm sure many of you have met people that have tried wine to excite them. It says, can you imagine a time, or actually what I said, can you imagine in a time when water was sterilized with a trace of wine, how much that might have meant if he has sought after it as pleasure? If that wine was there. And how many of you know those who unwind with a beer or go for a drink? I'm mentioning some taboos here, but just bear with me. Of course, the key here is for pleasure purposes as an escape, which can lead to excess. He built many things. That's the second point. The temple was huge and built with only the finest materials, finest craftsmen, with no expense spared. Not to mention the great amounts of farmland, orchards, city structures, and his palace, to name a few. Just a few. Number three. He hired and acquired many staff. Aside from the slaves, which were laboring servants, he had musicians, entertainers, concubines, and wives. And I said I would only say 1,000 once. Massive amounts of craftsmen, and many more to count. If you can imagine how many people would have filled the courts of Jerusalem at that point in time. Anyway, the end of these curiosities, for which he held nothing back to pursue, is vanity and meaningless. That's what he says. They were all vain. And then he says, there's nothing better for a man that he should eat and drink and make himself enjoy the good in his labors. Even this I've seen is from the hand of God. We have a choice in terms in which we strive after. The priorities we set, the foundations we build. A similar decision might be seen in this clip, which needs no introduction. And this is meant to wake everyone up in case you're asleep. could you please play that clip? I don't want it to all be heavy.
The absolute power!
What have you done?
Trust me!
The universe is mine to command, to control!
Not so fast, Jafar! Aren't you forgetting something? You wanted to be a genie? You got it!
What?
Everything that goes with it!
Phenomenal
cosmic powers!
Come on, energy!
I love freedom! Itty bitty
living space. Hell, you little genius, you.
Allow me. 10,000 years in a cave of wonders ought to chill him out.
Jasmine? I'm sorry I lied to you about being a prince.
I know why you did.
Well, I guess this is goodbye.
Oh, that stupid law. This isn't fair. I love you.
Al, no problem. You still got one wish left. Just say the word and you're a prince again.
But, Genie, what about your freedom?
Hey, it's only an eternity of servitude. This is love, Al.
You're not going to find another girl like her in a million years. Believe me, I know. I've looked.
Jasmine, I do love you, but I gotta stop pretending to be something I'm not.
I understand.
Jeannie, I wish for your freedom.
One bona fide prince pedigree coming up.
What? Jeannie, you're free. I'm free.
I'm free. Quick, quick. Wish for something outrageous. Say, I want the Nile. Wish for the Nile. Try that.
I wish for the Nile.
No way! Oh, that feels good! Oh, I'm free! I'm free at last! I'm hitting the road. I'm off to see the world.
Jeannie, I'm gonna miss you.
Me too, Al. No matter what anybody says,
you'll always be a prince to me.
That's right. You've certainly proven your worth as far as I'm concerned. It's that law that's the problem.
Father?
Well, am I sultan or am I sultan? From this day forth, the princess shall marry whoever she deems worthy.
Him. I choose you, Aladdin.
Call me Al.
I wanted to stop there so it could at least focus where it left off. First of all, I didn't need to introduce the movie. It's one that we've probably all seen a million times, and as parents, we've probably seen even a million times more. But I chose that clip with a lot of help from Pastor John up there, who's watching. He waves. It illustrates almost perfectly what Ecclesiastes is dealing with. It basically says, and again, this is hindsight from the other end. When we're feeling like we have lost many things or we have yet to gain many things, the key here is the priorities, the things that we set first, the things that that occupy our thoughts throughout the week. I've mentioned a few things that happen throughout the week that aren't normally, at least from my experience, they're usually kind of left under the rug. We come here and it's wonderful and it's important that we worship God. But I think, especially in these times when we're thinking that the economy is low or, I don't know, the news has been saying it's better, I don't know. But it's important always in every circumstance for us to have the right motivations and the right things that we focus on. And I guess the question I said, are our dreams focused on God first or on us first? There's a lot of things that we can use that can distract us. And we all know that those can become idols, even to us. We can serve those things and serve them. And I think it's been mentioned in our worship service before that, you know, and even in the prophets, prophets or Psalms. It talks about how can somebody cook something on wood and out of the same thing that he'd carved out of the wood, revere it. Basically, anything we build with our hands is just that. It's just something we've built with our hands. But we serve an eternal God. We serve an all-powerful God who is not confined to an itty-bitty living space. He's someone that we can access every day, every minute, who we can share our cares and our concerns and our goals and our hopes and our dreams with. And he's right there. Jesus has a few things to say about this. And I think I'm going to end in that. And it's found in, both of them are found in Matthew chapter 6, which is the Sermon on the Mount. But I've isolated these couple groups of verses so we can leave thinking about these. It says, look at the birds of the air. They neither sow nor reap nor gather into barns, and yet your heavenly Father keeps feeding them. Are you not worth much more than they? And who of you, by worrying and being anxious, can add one unit of measure, cubit, to his stature or to the span of his life? And why should you be anxious about clothes? Consider the lilies of the field and learn thoroughly how they grow. They neither toil nor spin. And yet I tell you, even Solomon in all his magnificence, excellence, dignity, and grace, was not arrayed like one of these. There's one of the times he mentioned Solomon. And if God so clothes the grass of the field, which today is alive and green, and tomorrow is tossed into the furnace, will he not much more surely clothe you, O you of little faith? Therefore, do not worry and be anxious, saying, what are we going to have to eat? Or what are we going to have to drink? Or what are we going to have to wear? For the Gentiles wish and crave diligently and seek after all these things, and your heavenly Father knows well that you need them all. But seek, aim at, and strive after first all his kingdom and his righteousness. And then all these things, taken together, will be given you besides. So do not worry or be anxious about tomorrow, for tomorrow will have worries and anxieties of its own. Sufficient each day is its own trouble. Lastly, in chapter 6, do not gather and heap up and store up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and rust and worm can consume and destroy, where thieves break in and steal. But gather and heap up and store up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust nor worm consume or destroy, and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. Solomon urges us not to get to the point in our lives where we realize how meaningless this life can be. You don't want to get to the point where you're writing how vain your life is and how much you hated the works of your hands. That was one of the verses I skipped, by the way. Ecclesiastes 2, again, says, for who can eat and who can have enjoyment any more than I can apart from him? As we pray this week, as we think to ourselves, as we talk to our loved ones, our friends, let's remember that we know that God causes all things under the sun to work together for good to those who love God and those who are called according to his purpose. Let's seek God even in these circumstances.